From Hook and Bullet to Policy and Science, we're here to discuss and dissect all matters of importance to Montana's rugged landscape and the people and wildlife that call it home. This is Montana Untamed. After more than 40 years and 1,200 holes, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has dug its last pit latrine on the Smith River. Starting this year, floaters are now required to carry with them something they have always been able to leave behind, their excrement. According to FWP, the Smith River Corridor was the only permitted river in the lower 48 that did not require people to pack out their human waste. And in early April, I joined personnel from the U.S. Forest Service, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and volunteers from the Montana Vet Program on a five-day trip down the river to remove and raft out the latrines, officially ushering in the new era of recreational management on the river. What follows is a conversation with Colin Moss, Smith River State Park manager, on the banks of the river on our final day of that trip. So, Colin, can you give me a brief history of the of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks' management of the Smith River? Did it start with the Smith River Management Act from the 89 legislature?
Well, actually, it happened before that. So the Smith River Management Act in 1989 essentially gave Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks the legislative or the statutory authority to manage the recreational use on the Smith River. And so that was the legal aspect, but actually the department started managing it, I believe in the, as early as the early 80s.
Okay.
Where they would actually hire river managers to kind of gauge how much use there was. Some of the things they did were put in voluntary sign-in boxes, roster boxes for people to sign in and say, how many groups there were, how many people per group, so they can kind of start to gauge, how much use was occurring at the time.
Because it was non-permitted.
It was non-permitted at that time, correct.
And so with that 89, with that Smith River Management Act, is that what made it permitted then?
Well, eventually. So that there again, that gave the authority to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and then eventually, I believe it was in 1991 when the river did become permitted.
Okay.
And not only for private groups, but also for commercial outfitters.
Okay. And then, I guess, can you fill me in from 91 till today, kind of what management has been like and maybe the big milestones?
Sure. So I think some of the things that were done initially were, even before the 1989 Smith River Management Act, the department, I believe it was in 1983, began installing pit toilets at camps that people historically would stay at. And then eventually the department started to designate camps. Some of them originally were designated specifically for outfitters and others for private groups. And eventually that changed where all the camps were just, for both private and commercial outfitted trips. But part of the issues had to do with, 80% of the land in the Smith River Corridor is actually privately owned.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one of the reasons to designate boat camps, just to make sure people weren't trespassing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so when did you then become the manager of the state park? I guess what's your history with the Smith River?
Sure, my history with the Smith River began in 1998. I was hired as a river ranger, a seasonal river ranger. So I started as a seasonal river ranger and I worked the 98 and the 98-99 seasons. And then I started the 2000 season in that winter, early spring. And then I got a full-time job with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks up in Kalispell.
Mm-hmm.
And then I spent about 5 years up in Kalispell as a park ranger. Thank you. And then became the manager of the Smith River in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And been with the program ever since.
Okay. And how has management of, this resource changed in your, long career, whether it was a patroller or now the manager?
Yeah, not a whole lot of changes. As far as the way we manage, we did discontinue a couple boat camps, added a couple new boat camps over the years. Obviously, the human waste management, we continued with the pit toilets up until this year, 2024. We tried to be a little more progressive on things. You know, we've gone through two management plans during my tenure,
mm-hmm.
A 2009 management plan, and then the last one in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the things we did is we disallowed dogs on the river. We also implemented a mandatory food storage regulation. So those are probably some of the major changes that we implemented. And then there have been some minor changes to the way we conduct the lottery drawing and the mm-hmm. lottery process for private groups.
Mm-hmm.
Some minor changes in how we manage the commercial outfitters and their launch days. But for the most part, not a whole lot of changes in the past 20 years.
Right, right. Can you walk me through that 2009 master plan, if you can remember that far back?
Sure.
You know, what was the impetus and what were the changes and conversations?
Yeah. So the 2009 management plan, that process actually started in 2007 when we put together an advisory committee. At that time, we had what was called the Smith River Advisory Council, and we utilized them to help us with that planning process. But the impetus behind that mainly was the management plan prior to that was a little over 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so a typical lifespan of a recreation management plan is, you know, give or take 10 or more years.
Okay.
And so we felt it was time. Things change as time goes on, and so it was due.
And they, what was the big, I think the big thing that came out of 09 was no pets on the river, right?
Yeah, that was probably the biggest change. One of the other issues that we also dealt with at that time was human waste management.
Right.
And in 2009, the draft management plan had human waste pack out as a requirement,
mm-hmm.
and then it didn't quite make it through
right.
the process.
It was
decided that no, we're going to continue with the pit toilets and continue to kind of monitor what the impacts of the pit toilets are. And then at such a time that the department feels that it was necessary to implement human waste, you know, that could come later.
Right. So while we're on the topic of the master plans, can you set the scene for me of, you know, this impetus for the 2022 master plan revision?
Yeah, there again, you know, the 2009 plan was well over 10 years old when we started the process, and we knew we had to start looking back again at some of the major issues that we did dealt with, you know, that we needed to address. And so basically what we did is, rather than rewrite the whole 2009 management plan, we just focused on four issues at the time. Two of the bigger issues were, you know, some of the natural resource and cultural resource impacts that we're starting to see, you know, accumulate over the years, specifically in the boat camps and at the boat camp landings.
What does that look like?
Well, you know, it's a really challenging issue to deal with. You know, we've talked a lot about it over the years on how do we manage the impacts that are occurring in the boat camps and specifically at the boat camp landings. When you have designated boat camps in a river corridor that gets a fair amount of use, you have, you know, multiple user groups every night using those camps and just that constant foot traffic back and forth within the landings and then within the boat camps themselves, obviously you're going to have impacts.
Right.
You know, loss of vegetative cover, erosion, trampling, sloughing of the riverbanks where the landings are located. And it's a pretty challenging thing to deal with there again when you have designated camps in a river corridor where there's limited access, and in how to you know, mitigate for those impacts, especially the stream banks. And so we're working on that. We're looking at probably four to six different camps that we've identified as being some of the worst off that we could start with,
right,
and start doing some pilot projects with. And so we're also working with a private contractor who's just finishing up what's called a basin-wide assessment for
okay.
the Smith River drainage. And this company has a lot of expertise and knowledge in stream bank restoration techniques. also including stream bank restoration techniques that do not require heavy equipment, that you can do on site using local resources, local, you know, vegetation like willows and rock and other sources of soil, and then just using hand tools and manpower to get the job done.
Right. Okay, so sorry, back. I kind of diverted us there. Back to that 2022 revision. What were the other, you know, you said there were four major components to it.
Obviously, like I said, the two big ones were, were the resource issues, the human waste. One of them was floater opportunities. That was another big one.
Oh, right.
Just
okay.
Recognizing the fact that it's getting more and more difficult all the time for people to draw a permit, and what can we do to increase the odds? So management of Camp Baker was the fourth issue, and basically looking at, you know, making Camp Baker full-time day use only for the most part, with the exception of the fall hunting season where we still do allow overnight camping. So, and that was an issue that we had also talked about over the past several years, as the average group size started to increase, the popularity of the Smith River increased, the total number of groups on average started to increase. At least probably 50% of the float parties that were floating every day would also overnight at Camp Baker. And there again, as the group sizes got bigger and bigger, it started to become more and more crowded down there. Social issues, but then also resource impact issues with, again, very similar to the boat camps. And Camp Baker essentially was like one giant boat camp with not one group per night, but multiple groups per night using that site. And then the fact that, you know, the site was never really designed properly. It was never really large enough or designed properly to accommodate that type of use, that much use, night in and night out, and including not just the overnight camping portion of it, but also just parking for vehicles and trailers.
Right.
And so we started to kind of run out of locations and space for parking, and there again, similar to the boat camps, the impacts just started to increase over time. And then when the COVID virus hit us in 2020 in the spring, it kind of forced our hand at the time to limit overnight camping, just due to the fact that nobody knew how the virus spread, and social distancing obviously was one of the big recommendations coming from the experts and so the way we handled it initially was we closed the river, and then we had to come up with kind of an alternative plan if we were going to decide to allow floating again and recreational use on the Smith River. So our plan was to limit Camp Baker to day use only, don't allow overnight camping, but allow groups to show up, and we had other protocols in place to social distance folks. And when we put that plan into place, we discovered that it actually was working pretty well. And part of that plan was, rather than registering groups in person at Camp Baker on the day of their launch, again, for social distancing reasons, we decided we would do it over the phone. And so the plan was as well, let's do it over the phone. We'll do it 2 days prior to their launch date. We'll complete the registration process over the phone, including payment of float fees. Then the only thing we need to do when float parties show up at Camp Baker is hand them a Ziploc bag packet with all their information that they need, in their maps, their boat tags, etc. And it seemed to work pretty well. And the feedback that we got from the public, not only the private groups, but also the commercial outfitters, was very positive. Also including, the community of White Sulphur Springs, where it was a little bit of an economic boon to them.
Right.
Where, since people weren't able to camp at Camp Baker, they were staying in town, utilizing the motels, restaurants, bars, gas stations, etc., more than they did in the past.
So let's get to what brings us here. We're sitting on the bank of the Smith River right now on the last night of a 5-day project trip. The latrine removal operation. Walk me through, how we got from there's going to be a latrine in every camp to now we're pulling them.
Sure. there again, it wasn't something that happened overnight. It was a culmination of many, many years. And again, when we initiated the management plan process back in 2007, mm-hmm. That was one of our issues at that time. We were recognizing just as time went on, you know, the cumulative impacts of year after year of digging pit latrines in each one of the boat camps was starting to become unsustainable. Mm. And I believe it was in 1983 is when Montana Fish, Wildlife and Parks and the United States Forest Service started digging some of the first pit toilets.
Right.
And putting in some of the first pit toilets. And so, you know, as the years have gone on, I would look back historically in previous annual reports, and when we finished the management plan update in 2009, for my calculations, I think I calculated that the department had dug, Fish, Wildlife and Parks and the Forest Service had dug probably approximately at least 500 pit latrines from 1983 through 2009. And since then, you know, when we began the management plan process and in 2021 and ended that one in 2022, you know, that number probably ballooned to between 700 and 800, if not more, pit latrines that had been dug over the years. And so literally in some of these camps, just based on the size of the boat camp, the topography, and just the ability to actually dig pits, we started to run out of space in some mm-hmm. of these sites, where we ended up having to dig into old pits. And a lot of times we didn't know we were digging into old pits until we'd get a foot or more down, and then we'd run into some of the evidence that we were in an old pit. Sometimes right. we could continue to dig. Other times we'd have to stop and find a new location.
Right, right. So this seems to me like a pretty big shift, or like a new chapter maybe for the Smith River. Like, can you kind of talk about how, like, maybe big of a deal this is? From a, you know, a resource management standpoint?
Sure, sure.
And by that I mean the latrine removals.
Yeah, so, you know, for a lot of Montanans, this is going to be something that's new and maybe a little bit scary for them. But in the world of river recreation, it's not a new thing. Pretty much most other rivers in the West that are similar to the Smith River, that are multi-day trip rivers, overnight trip rivers, have fairly several years ago, some of them, you know, two or three decades ago, began requiring human waste pack out. And so, again, in the big picture, it's nothing new, but for, you know, a lot of Montanans, the Smith River may be the only river that they ever float, mm-hmm. Do a trip like this on. So it's going to be new, maybe a little bit scary for folks, but the technology is there, the products are there. You know, there's several products on the market as far as the portable solid human waste toilet systems are involved, and that's obviously the route that we decided to go mm-hmm. with the Smith Rivers, it's historic. As the river manager, with my experience with, you know, nearly 20 years as the manager and a few seasons as a river ranger, you know, I witnessed it firsthand, and I could see as time went on, year after year, what those impacts, what those natural resource impacts and potential cultural resource impacts were from digging toilets year after year. And, you know, we would keep track every year, and we put that information on our annual report. And on average, we would dig about 35 pits a year. And mm-hmm. so you just kind of have to do the math and think, boy, year after year. And so for a lot of folks, they ask us, well, why are you doing this? What's the big deal? You know, is it an issue with workload or what is it? And, you know, you have to try to kind of paint the picture for them is, well, here are the reasons we're doing it. Just the sheer natural resource impacts, the fact that we have to dig multiple toilets a year, the lack of space in some of these locations. And it's just was the right thing to do for the resource.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that the Smith River has such an allure to recreationists? You've spent a lot of time in this canyon.
Yeah, you know, it's the Smith River, it's just a special place. It's, you know, for me, it's just, you know, the sheer raw beauty of the Smith River. I think that's probably one of the things that just blows people away, especially the first time they float it. and I know it did me. You know, I moved to Montana in 1990, and I remember I hadn't heard of the Smith River until the early 90s when I was just finishing college. And the first time I floated it, it just really blew me away that in the middle of Montana, east of the Rocky Mountains, in a little island mountain range between the Little Belt and Big Belt Mountains, that this type of topography and this type of geology existed. You know, you're driving on the interstate between Helena and Great Falls, and you look off to the east, and you would never guess that there's this deep gorge canyon cutting through this incredible limestone geology, and you have this topography. And then obviously, you know, the scenery, the geology, the wildlife, and then of course, obviously there's the fishing aspect of it too, the trout fishing. So that's obviously one of the big draws too, is you kind of have a combination of all those things. And then obviously, you know, there's the social aspect where, you know, people are, you know, for some folks, this is, you know, their one big trip, maybe vacation or family vacation or vacation with their friends or their good buddies that they want to try to do every year. And there's a bonding that occurs in the social aspect of getting together, planning the trip, you know, floating the river, fishing, camping, hanging out around the campfire at night. And just, you know, creating those lasting memories for a lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, I feel like, I think that's all I got. I mean, do you have any final thoughts about, you know, managing the Smith River into the future, I guess?
Yeah, all I would say is, you know, that it's a special place. And I think people just need to remember and realize that it's their public land. And even though Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is the lead agency, we're managing the resource and the recreational opportunity for the public. The public, I always try to instill in the public that this is your land also. And don't always just rely on the land management agencies to take care of your public land and special places like the Smith River. It's also your duty and your responsibility to be a steward of your resource, your public land, and to do the right thing. And there again, I think with the fact that we're going to human waste pack out, I strongly believe that is the right thing to do for the resource, for the future and future generations.
Well, thanks, Colin.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
15 miles to go tomorrow, right?
11 and a half, I believe.
11 and a half to Eden.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, cool beans.
Yeah.
Montana Untamed is a podcast from the newsrooms of Lee Enterprises Montana newspapers. Visit any of our websites or subscribe wherever podcasts are found.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.